Ekhatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekhatra AI.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into something fascinating, maybe even a bit controversial in medicine, the placebo effect.
Yeah, it's often seen as, you know, the annoying bit, the fake effect you have to filter out to see if the drug actually works.
Right, like it's deception or just failure. But the book we're looking at today, Placebos by Catherine T. Hall, well, it argues completely differently.
It really does. Hall's core argument is that the placebo effect is anything but fake. It's not just all in your head in that dismissive way.
She says it's a real, powerful, and crucially, a measurable neurobiological event.
Exactly. And understanding it gives us this incredible insight into how our minds, our genes, even our social interactions, how they all physically shape our health. It takes it out of like philosophy and puts it squarely into biology. So let's talk about Catherine Hall herself. She's a molecular biologist, a geneticist, working at Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's. What makes her the right person to tackle this?
Well, she's got this this really unique blend of expertise. She's deep into the hard sciences, PhD in microbiology and molecular genetics, real lab stuff.
Okay.
But she also has a master's in public health. So she can zoom right into the microscopic details, the genes, the molecules, and then immediately zoom back out to see what it means for patients, for clinics, for, you know, healthcare systems.
That connection seems absolutely critical here. Trying to link something like expectation, which feels so subjective to, well, genetics. Did she face resistance?
Oh, I'd imagine quite a bit, because she was really pioneering this idea, looking at the genetics of placebo response. She was one of the very first to say, hey, maybe your genes predict how well you respond to a placebo.
Wow. That changes everything, doesn't it? It means responding to belief isn't just a personality quirk. It could be partly hardwired.
Precisely. It makes it personal, biological. For some people, their system is just set up to respond more strongly to that positive expectation.
So her mission with the book Placebos is what? To sort of rescue the placebo.
Yeah, rescue it from being seen as trickery or noise in the data. She wants to establish it as a legitimate scientific field and maybe even a tool in the therapeutic toolbox, not just something to control for in trials.
The book sounds like it covers a lot. It starts with the history, right? The word itself, I shall please in Latin.
Yeah, it traces it from way back medieval times up to its current role in, you know, randomized controlled trials, the gold standard.
But the real shift she focuses on is the neurobiology.
That's the core. She breaks down how our expectations are conditioning, how they act like actual triggers in the brain. They flip switches, release the body's own powerful chemicals.
I think one of the hardest ideas for people to maybe grasp in this work is that the placebo isn't really the sugar pill itself.
Not at all. That's maybe the biggest misconception. The placebo, as Hall describes it, is the whole shebang. It's the ritual of treatment, the doctor's confidence, the clinic environment, maybe even the color of the pill.
Wait, the color?
Oh, yeah. There's fascinating research. She mentions blue pills tend to work better as placebo sedatives, red as stimulants. It's all part of the context the brain is reading.
So the entire experience, the narrative around healing, that's the active ingredient in a way.
That's exactly her point. That context is the medicine, sending signals to our brain's regulatory systems.
Okay, let's dig into some of the proof she presents for this.
Yeah.
You mentioned Henry Beecher's paper from 1955.
Right, the powerful placebo. That was kind of a landmark, suggesting maybe 35% or so of a drug's effect was actually down to this placebo response, the context.
And it's not a fixed number.
No, Hall shows it's incredibly adaptable. Like two placebo pills, often better than one, a placebo injection, more powerful than a pill. The brain seems to interpret more intervention, more ritual, as stronger medicine. It makes a kind of intuitive sense, right?
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
But what's the most, maybe, dramatic evidence she talks about, the kind that really makes you stop and think?
For me, it's the sham surgery studies,
yeah.
Especially the ones on knee osteoarthritis. They were pretty controversial.
How do they work?
Okay, so you have patients with really bad knee pain. They randomize them. One group gets the standard arthroscopic surgery, you know, the cleanup inside the knee.
Okay.
The other group gets sham surgery. They make the incisions, the patient goes through the whole process, but crucially, the surgeon doesn't actually do the internal repair.
Wow. And the results.
That's the kicker. The group that got the sham surgery reported basically the same level of pain relief and improvement in function as the group that got the real procedure.
Hard to believe.
It is. But it's powerful proof that the ritual, the expectation, the whole context of undergoing a procedure triggers a profound healing response in the brain, independent of the mechanical fix itself.
So if expectation is that powerful, how? How does a thought, a belief, actually translate into less pain or better movement? What's happening chemically?
All really focuses on the neurobiology here, pointing to specific pathways. The first big one is the body's own opioid system.
Like endorphins.
Exactly, endogenous opioids. They've done experiments where people get pain relief from a placebo, real, measurable relief. But then, if you give them a naloxone...
That's the drug they use for overdoses, right? It blocks opioids.
That's the one. And when they give naloxone, poof, the placebo pain relief vanishes.
So that proves...
It proves the brain must have released its own opioids to create that pain relief in the first place. The placebo effect literally activated the brain's internal pharmacy.
Okay, that's one clear chemical pathway. What else?
The other major one she discusses involves dopamine. This is really clear in studies with Parkinson's patients.
Who have low dopamine levels, which affects movement.
Right. So if you give these patients a placebo, but you tell them it's a potent new Parkinson's drug, you can actually see on brain scans a significant release of dopamine in their brains.
Just from the expectation.
It's from the expectation. And this dopamine release leads to measurable improvements in their motor control. The belief triggers the neurotransmitter. It's amazing.
Which brings us back to the genetics you mentioned earlier. Hall calls it placebo-omics. What exactly is that?
Yeah, placebo-omics. It's essentially the idea of looking for the specific genes that influence how strongly someone responds to a placebo. Hall basically asked, is everyone equally good at flipping these internal chemical switches?
And the answer is no.
Her research strongly suggests no. She zeroed in on one particular gene called COMT.
COMT, what does that do?
It provides the code for an enzyme, and this enzyme's job is to break down dopamine, especially in the prefrontal cortex, the thinking part of the brain.
Okay.
And like lots of genes, COMT comes in different versions, alleles. Hall looked at two main types. One type, Val-Val, makes a fast-acting enzyme, so you tend to have lower baseline dopamine.
And the other?
The other, Met-Met, makes a slower enzyme. So those individuals tend to have higher baseline dopamine levels.
So, which group responds more strongly to placebos? The high dopamine or low dopamine folks?
Her findings were pretty clear. The MET-MET individuals, the ones with naturally higher dopamine because of the slower enzyme, they were significantly more likely to be high placebo responders, especially for pain relief.
So there's a direct biological link. Your genes influence your dopamine levels, and that influences how much your expectations can trigger these internal healing pathways.
Exactly. It connects the dots from belief to neurotransmitters right down to your DNA.
But Hall also stresses that this power of expectation, it's a double-edged sword, right? Which leads to the nocebo effect.
Right, the nocebo effect. If placebo is I shall please, nocebo is I shall harm, it's the dark side.
So negative expectations cause real negative symptoms.
Absolutely. It's often seen in clinical trials when people in the placebo group, remember, they're taking an inert substance report, side effects like headaches or nausea, just because they were warned these might happen. The negative expectation creates the symptom.
Is the mechanism different here? Is it still opioids or dopamine?
Mostly different, yeah. Nocebo effects seem to work more through anxiety pathways. They trigger stress hormones like cortisol and other chemicals like CCK, which can actually amplify pain and make you feel worse.
Hall mentions some pretty extreme examples.
She does, like the phenomenon sometimes called voodoo death, where intense negative belief, maybe from a perceived curse, seems to trigger a real physiological shutdown, or people developing a rash from a harmless leaf they were told was poison ivy.
It really underscores how careful doctors need to be when talking about side effects.
Definitely. How you communicate risk is not neutral. It can actively influence the outcome, for better or worse. The words themselves become part of the treatment context.
Okay, let's try to pull together the main themes Hall wants us to take away. The first one feels like an absolute foundation. The mind-body connection isn't mystical, it's measurable biology.
Yes, that's huge. Forget the debate about whether it's real. Hall shows the data brain scans, hormone levels, genetic markers, thoughts and beliefs trigger tangible physical changes. It's electrochemical reality.
Second big theme, context is active medicine.
Right. Everything surrounding the treatment matters. The doctor's empathy, the setting, the ritual. These aren't just nice to haves. They're active components that talk directly to the brain's predictive and healing mechanisms. We need to build this understanding into how we deliver care.
And third, this interesting shift she proposes, moving from deception to honesty with open-label placebos.
Yeah, this is fascinating. The idea that maybe you don't need to trick the patient. She discusses studies where people with conditions like IBS were given placebo pills, told they were placebos.
And they still got better.
And they still showed significant improvement, which suggests the real power isn't in the lie, it's in the ritual itself, the act of taking something to get better, the positive relationship with the provider.
That's quite profound. And the final theme.
The duality of expectation, that this powerful force can heal placebo or harm a nocebo, and that learning to consciously manage our expectations is, well, a critical health skill.
When you think about the book, what are some of the key ideas or lines that really stick with you?
One that really reframes it for me is this. The placebo effect is not something that happens instead of a real medical effect. It is a real neurobiological event in its own right. It gives it legitimacy.
Yeah, it stops being the other thing. Another important one for doctors, I think, is every medical treatment is a combination of its active ingredient and the placebo effect. It forces a more holistic view.
Definitely. You can't separate them cleanly. And linking back to the open label idea, that notion that the success of open-label placebo suggests that the power lies not in trickery, but in the ritual of treatment and the positive therapeutic alliance itself. It feels like a really hopeful direction.
So thinking practically now, how can we, you know, apply these insights in our own lives for patients?
Well, it empowers you, doesn't it? Knowing your mindset is a scientifically validated part of healing. So trying to cultivate realistic, positive expectations. Be an active partner. And maybe choose healthcare providers you feel you can build real trust with. That relationship matters biologically.
And what about dealing with those scary side effect lists that come with medications? The nocebo risk.
That's a big one. Hall's work suggests being mindful. Read the information, understand the possibilities, but try not to internalize it as a definite forecast for you. Frame it as information, not a prediction. Just being aware of the nocebo effect can help lessen its power. And beyond just medicine, think about harnessing the power of ritual in everyday health habits. If the brain loves positive, consistent rituals in a medical context,
then maybe applying that to exercise or meditation or even just how you take your vitamins could enhance the benefits.
Exactly. Make it consistent. Make it mindful. You're leveraging the same brain pathways Hall describes.
This has definitely shifted my thinking. I think the genetic link, the COMT gene stuff, that was the most surprising and maybe the most powerful piece for me. The idea that our biology primes us for belief effects.
Yeah, it's quite something. For me, the biggest shift is thinking about the future. This idea of precision placebo medicine. If we know who's likely to be a high responder based on genetics or other markers,
we could tailor the context of their care, the communication, the ritual.
Precisely. Optimize the placebo component of their treatment to maximize the outcome, maybe even before using stronger drugs. It integrates the mind-body connection right into standard practice.
It really solidifies that the mind influencing the body isn't magic. It's complex, fascinating medicine. So here's a final thought for you to consider. If the context of treatment is truly this crucial, how could we consciously redesign our everyday environments, our homes, our workplaces, our relationships to better support positive expectations and promote healing? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.